Today is October 3rd, 2018, and this is episode number 482 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm telling myself three times over that change is good. 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 To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups slash context machine.
Yeah, that's the place.
That's the place.
Yeah, and change is good. That means that that the cashier was actually able to either use a machine or properly do math in their head and give you your money back.
Yep, it could actually have been the machine doing the math.
Yes, which means that the cashier
like, why are you like being all like, you know, like racist against self checkout computer machine things?
Mostly because they don't like me.
All right. Fair enough. That's ridiculous. Now, speaking of ridiculous, Jeff.
Yes.
We have at least one ridiculous topic this week.
At least one.
Yeah, we'll save that. We'll let you figure out which one that is.
Yeah, that's only fair because, you know, no spoilers.
Okay, speaking of no spoilers, it's not the first topic.
Okay, great.
Have you seen, I know you have, when's the last time you saw the, I think it was called Natalie Raps. It's the SNL short with Chris Natalie Parnell. Portman. And Natalie Portman and what's his face? Who's the guy that did all the songs with Chris Parnell?
I don't.
Andy Samberg.
Okay.
Right. Anyway, so and you know, I that and no spoilers. Chronicles of Narnia piece that that same crew did. Brilliant TV.
I will absolutely agree with that.
Brilliant, brilliant TV. I wish I could just like start quoting some of the Natalie Raps thing, but most of it's profanity.
Yeah, so. You actually can't quote it.
but I can't. All right. But speaking of the Pictar Pro.
You know, it just wouldn't be a show without your total non sequitur transition.
It's true. Get them while you can. Pictar Pro is this is a product, and we have a reason for making a product one of our segments
because you like it.
Well, yes,
and that's good enough reason.
Yes, it would be, but in this particular case, I think there's kind of a broader conversation to have. So the Pictar Pro, a few weeks ago, I did a deal of the day. Our friends at Stack Commerce put together a deal for us for the Pictar, the original Pictar. Maybe it's called the Pictar Grip. I forget.
Brian, what's a Pictar?
The Pictar is this product from Mego, Israeli company, and it's essentially a camera grip for your iPhone. Right. Okay. So it's got that hump. It's like a DSLR. It's got that DSLR hump where the battery would usually go in a DSLR or an SLR. Actually, SLRs had that hump too. Right. And
that's where the little mechanism for turning the film was, right?
Yes. But it also was a very convenient grip. That's actually one reason why it survived. And that's kind of one of the things I want to talk about. And so this device, it's, you know, you stick your iPhone in, and then it gives you buttons. There's a Pictar app, and it gave you physical buttons for controlling things like, you know, the exposure and, you know, and adjusting various settings on the Pictar camera app with the physical buttons on the Pictar grip, and it communicates via Bluetooth with your iPhone. And then your iPhone or, you know, Android, if that's your jam, the lens on the back of your device stick out the end.
Okay.
And, you know, and so basically it allows you to hold your smartphone more like a traditional DSLR or SLR camera.
Okay. Okay.
And that was cool. And like the thing, I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh man, this is great. And it's absolutely, I love it when this happens. When we get some product that Stack Commerce has put together a deal for us. And it's the kind of thing that I would have mentioned as a cool stuff found if we didn't have a deal on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just absolutely love it when that happens. And this was the case for this Pictar device. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking like, you know, the one thing I'd really like for it to do would be to have some kind of viewfinder mechanism so that I could put my iPhone up to my eyeball and frame the shot without, you know, like looking at the world right, around.
Like an old school viewfinder where you're looking through the glass.
Yeah,
like an
SLR or a DSLR.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you.
Right. And lo and behold, the company contacts me completely unrelated to our deal, mind you, but like within a few days of me running this deal, they were wanting to pitch me on a new device that was coming called the Pictar Pro.
And let me guess, it adds in the Brian feature.
It adds in the Brian feature. It does. You know, it's actually more than that. It's a higher quality. It's a higher quality product all around. It's more expensive. The buttons are bigger. Everything's a little bit heavier. The grip has got a fake shark skin material to make your grip all that much better. And it adds in the viewfinder. And what the viewfinder does is like when you're actually using it, it shrinks. This is so clever. It shrinks your display down to just big enough for you to see everything through the viewfinder.
All right. That's clever.
So it shrinks not your actual physical display. Obviously it shrinks the picture down on the display so that it's perfectly framed by the viewfinder.
That's
so you can really stick clever. It up to your eyeball. And here's why I like that idea. I have always not liked holding my iPhone or, you know, God forbid, an iPad in front of my face and framing the picture on the display. And the reason for that being that I believe, and I asked the company about this. I was curious if they were going to say, if they were going to, you know, give me some confirmation bias because, you know, really that's all we want.
Sure.
And when you're holding an SLR, a DSLR, or even an old Instamatic camera, and you're holding it up to your eyeball, the rest of the world is blocked out. And all you see is what is going to be more, you know, depending on the quality of the camera, is what's going to be in the photograph.
Right. Yeah. So that makes it easier to visualize just what the shot is.
Right. It makes which means that you can frame your shot better. You're not distracted by the rest of the world. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not possible when you're holding your iPhone or your smartphone or your iPad or whatever, and you're using the screen, or if you're using like, you know, people would do this with do you remember the early just digital cameras before smartphones kind of killed the digital camera industry. People would frame that they would just, you know, hold the camera up in front of them. They wouldn't use the viewfinder and they would just use the display. And I, that always like that just bothered the crap out of me too. And it's the same kind of thing. When you've got the rest of the world intruding into your vision, you are not paying attention and you cannot be paying as much attention to framing your shot as you are when that's all you're seeing by definition.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think one of the reasons that people really were drawn to the screen as opposed to the viewfinder on those old cameras was that because a lot of them, they didn't bother to make the viewfinder show what the lens was actually seeing. It was just like a little window that you looked through, and it pointed the same direction as the lens. So you'd snap a photo, and that's not actually what you were getting a picture of.
That is, yeah, I'm sure you're right there. Plus, yeah, I'm sure there are a number of reasons for it. But the reality is that if you're allowing, like, again, this last thing I said, if you're allowing the rest of the world to intrude in your actual vision, you cannot, by definition, be paying as much attention to framing your shot as you would if that was all you were seeing. Mm-hmm. So enter the Pictar Pro. Pictar Pro does this. Like I said, it's a more expensive device than the original. It's on, they're launching it on Kickstarter. Now I saw, they've already got prototypes. They're already making these things. Mm-hmm. So they're not using Kickstarter for manufacturing. And then Mego is a not small company to begin with. They're using Kickstarter for pre-orders and for, you know, to build, mm-hmm. To build hype and interest in the product, not to get money for manufacturing. And to that end, like just within the first couple of hours, they had a $25,000 goal and they were at $45,000. And that was yesterday. And I'm checking.
That's pretty good.
They're at $80,000 right now. So anyway, this device is happening. They're going to send me one. I don't have it yet. They are going to send me one and I'm pretty excited about it.
That's
now cool. All of that said, mm-hmm. Here's what I really want to talk about. And that is how what we think of as a camera, what especially people our age think of as a camera, you know, an SLR, a DSLR, is the result of more than 100 years of camera evolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 100 years of trying new things and tossing out the things that don't work.
Right. Yeah. Cameras have been really well refined.
Yes. So much so that things like the grip, that's not just necessary. That hump that you wrap your fingers around. That's not still there because it's necessary. It's there because it makes it easier to hold your camera with one hand in particular.
I'm going to take us down a rabbit hole real quick.
Oh, I like that.
I used to have, so this kind of dates how long ago it was. I had a really nice SLR and it was.
Well, they still make great SLRs. Doesn't necessarily date you.
Okay. Well, all right. So great. It doesn't date me. Sweet. I'm young. and I eventually stopped using it and went to a smaller point and shoot camera mm-hmm. because it was so difficult for me to use. And most people wouldn't even think about it, but the hump's on the wrong side. All of the controls are backwards. Oh,
yeah,
because you're
lefty. Yeah.
And
you have no soul.
It's no. Well, that's not true. I have a whole box of them that I've collected.
That is funny.
Yeah. Well, except for the people that are like, where'd my soul go?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Except for one guy who was like, thank you. Anyhow, yeah, just the whole design of the SLR, DSLR body was so difficult for me to use because nothing would balance in my hands and the controls are in the wrong place. And yeah, it was just so difficult. So this is one of the reasons why I get excited about products like the Pictar Pro, because even though all they're doing is making a right-handed thing, they could make a left-handed one too. And now,
but they won't.
No, they won't. But the thing is, this is something someone can do because the camera on the phone, it doesn't matter which end it's at when you take a photograph. It just works. So this opens up the potential for companies to make specialized products so that left-handed people can use camera features in the same way that right-handed people do and not have it be this awkward thing or this thing where you just have to learn to be right-handed for your camera or whatever. So I know that's not happening here, but
no, but it is an interesting point. And I really hadn't, I mean, I am right-handed. Actually, I'm semi ambidextrous, but I'm definitely right-handed. And it, living in my right-handed world, I really hadn't even thought about you. Sorry about that, brother.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, must be Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Must be Wednesday.
You're still here. Yeah. Oh. Hi, Brian.
Yeah. Hi, Jeff. Right. Okay. So back to this thing, right? Cameras were refined. What we have thought about as a, you know, a DSLR and SLR for the last, for the vast majority of SLRs, for the last several decades, and for the DSLR for the last, 15, 20 years, thereabouts, maybe probably more like 15, I guess. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the DSLRs.
Yeah.
16, maybe at the most. And what we think of is that is the result of decades worth of trial and error. And again, that, that grip might have started off for being there for a reason, but it survived not because it was needed, but not because the space was needed, but because the form factor is superior for holding one's camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's just one little example of the placement of all the buttons on a DSLR. Those have all largely survived as a product of trial and error, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now here come smartphones, and smartphones are certainly killing the, the entry level of the DSLR space. More and more, the vast majority of pictures are being taken with smartphones, and it's changing things. But I think it's changing things not because it is a superior way of taking cameras, but because it's the living embodiment of the idea that the best camera is the one you have with you.
Mm-hmm. So why not have that be a really good camera?
Right. And to be fair, iPhones are amazing cameras. Most high-end Android devices are amazing cameras. And even mid-level and entry-level smartphones are, better than most of the cheap digital cameras that used to exist. Mm-hmm. And you have it with you and you can take a picture, and that's great. And that's why these things are important, but they're not surviving because they are better than DSLRs at taking cameras, at taking pictures. They're surviving and thriving because we always have these darn things in our pocket.
Right.
So my question is, especially those of our listeners who are camera people or who used to be camera people. I mean, like, is there something to this idea? Is there something to this idea that I don't even know what I'm trying to ask.
All right. Well, then let me ask a question which may or may not fit in with the question that you want to ask. Is a product like the Pictar Pro of any value to someone that grew up with smartphone cameras?
And is it the flip side of the question? Is it of any value to people who did not grow up with DSLR cameras or SLR cameras? Like, are young people going to care about this? Are people who have, who have never used a viewfinder, is it, rather than the viewfinder somehow being inherently and obviously better, is it weird and stupid? Why would you do that? You could just look through the display.
Yeah. Why would I want to smash my face up against the camera when I can hold it out and just look at the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and I know I'm weird, but that's an interesting idea to me.
Well, what makes one of the things that makes the Pictar Pro a really interesting product is that it's taking on-screen controls and creating real-world controls for those. So you have dials and switches again, as opposed to just tapping on your screen. And to me, that seems really compelling. And maybe it's because I've used cameras prior to smartphones, and the idea of having a button that I'm physically turning or pressing is...
Yeah, well, yeah. Let me amp that up a little bit, Jeff. So currently, to adjust settings on a camera app, you've got to take one hand off of your camera and touch it, which of course makes your device move.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can actually be holding your smartphone up to your eyeball and using your, and still holding it, still grasping it with both hands and changing the settings on the app with these physical buttons, i.e. your thumb,
mm-hmm.
while you're looking through that viewfinder, that is super compelling to me too.
Yeah.
Right. You're not tapping the phone. You're not moving it. I mean, like, you know, you don't have to, you can securely grasp your smartphone and take, even if you're not using the viewfinder, actually, this is true. Even if you're not using the viewfinder, and adjust things while keeping your camera steady.
Yeah, I see the value in that.
Yeah.
You get a shot perfectly framed, and now you need to make an adjustment before you take the photo. You don't want to have to start over and reframe.
Right.
Yeah. I like it. Now make a left-handed one.
Yeah, fair enough on that front. I guess there's one other way I can try to express this thought that's in my head is something like the Pictar and the Pictar Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a last gasp of the DSLR form factor / concept, you know, for an aging populace? Or is this a fantastic way of marrying the good things that have come out of these decades, decades of this form factor evolving? Is this a marriage of that to the modern world?
You know,
it could be both.
Yeah. Well, I think there are valid arguments for both sides of that. And it may turn out that products like this are niche, and the only people that really get into them are people that use DSLR and DSLR cameras, or people that like to do the whole retro hipster thing, and they want to use the old school technology.
All right. So what we really need is we need a device that holds film and attaches to your smartphone and uses your smartphone lens, but actually transfers the image to the film. That would be the hipster.
That'd be the hipster
device.
And
like, oh, hipsters would love that.
And there's like one of our listeners right now that just sat back in their chair and went, holy crap, I can make this. And we can't wait to hear about your Kickstarter.
I don't think that would actually work, but you know what?
No, you could. I can totally see how this would work, because you need to get the light on the film. So what you'd actually be doing is exposing the film to your camera display. your phone display. So it's taking a picture your phone display.
Oh, that's just so awful. By the way, cassettes suck.
Yeah, and yet I had so many because that's what we had back in the day.
No, I just can't get over people who talk about how much better cassettes are. Like, cassettes are in every single possible conceivable way inferior. Sound quality is inferior. Portability is inferior. Convenience is inferior.
Mm-hmm.
Two sides inferior. Of course, LPs had two sides too, but whatevs.
Yeah. Hiss.
Anyway.
In everything. Inferior.
Yes. Sound quality. Sound quality is terrible. You're losing like 30%. Every copy, you lose like 30% of your sound.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Hey, right. Get off my lawn.
Exactly. Exactly. I've got to put do not disturb signs on my lawn, so don't stand on it.
Yeah.
Because I got to put my sign there.
Which means I probably need to take that milkshake back out of your lawn. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, probably would have brought all the kids.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Right. Pictar Pro, it is on Kickstarter right now. They've already raised $80,000. Let me look at the current one. All the early birds are gone, of course. Is that right? Pictar Pro. Early birds are gone. Yeah, there was a 119 early bird. That one's just gone. There's a 129 that'll still get you a Pictar Pro. 139 get you a Pictar Pro in a case. There's an early bird starter kit that gets a travel case and a wrist strap for 139. Why would anyone do the do that instead of the other 139 that doesn't include the wrist strap, right?
Right. Unless there's some other really cool thing that you just miss seeing.
Yeah, there's a go kit that includes a bungee cord, neck strap. Okay, right. Rock on. Got to have that. Oh, boy. Failure on my part. The viewfinder is optional.
Oh.
So if you want one with a viewfinder, that's actually starting at $169. That actually makes sense. Now that I'm seeing that, I was kind of wondering how that was going to work. Yeah. All right. So it's $169 to get the viewfinder part two. Oh, by the way, you can also still based on what I just said, you can also continue to use your smartphone display to take your pictures if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to use the viewfinder. That your display is not occluded.
Yeah. So if you want to have the balance and grips and buttons and all that, and still want to use your regular phone screen, you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Indeed. And they also have another one with a tripod. And there you go.
All right.
Oh, I see. So yeah, there was an early bird kit with the viewfinder for $159. Those are gone too.
Of course they are.
Yeah. So that's how they raised their $80,000 already. All right. So there you have it. I'd love to hear what people think. Am I like the only person who's nuts about this thing?
You know, my guess is there will be other people that are really excited about it too. I think it's very intriguing. I'm not excited in the way you are because it's not something that I will use.
Oh, I would. I would absolutely use this. You can use it, by the way, with third-party lens kits too. Because your smartphone just sticks out the end of this thing. The lenses stick out the end of this thing. So you could still attach whatever kind of third-party lenses you like to use.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, which to be just all I'm excited about this thing. I would absolutely take it on any kind of vacation. And I would probably keep it in my man purse all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have it handy.
Yep. Okay, so let's see here. Here's the next topic. Now, we still don't want to offer any spoilers, but this is the ridiculous one.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what it is.
So it's sort of... All right, so here's the deal. Netflix is going to be bringing... now, is it, did you actually read the piece?
Yes.
Is this a done deal?
Yeah,
it is a done deal.
It's a done deal.
So they're bringing the Chronic... What? Coles of Narnia. No, not actually, not that. They're bringing the Chronicles of Narnia in, like, somehow both a movie and a series. How does that work?
Movies and a series.
Is it like, so like two different trees of the same thing?
They haven't made that clear yet. So my guess is that they will make movies that are like big epic parts, and then have the series, which fills in other parts.
What?
So you can watch the movies, but then you get more when you're watching the series as well. And they can probably explore other aspects of...
Yeah, are they going to be adding to the story?
They might be.
I mean,
they don't say in the announcement.
These books are decades of... You know, here's the interesting thing. I liked the Chronicles of Narnia when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people like to mention the Chronicles of Narnia and the Lord of the Rings in the same breath.
And my guess is you take umbrage with that.
Well, I do. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were peers and friends and buddies, and C.S. Lewis unlike the Lord of the Rings, the Chronicles of Narnia, although the Lord of the Rings world, the creation myth certainly borrows from both Christianity and other religions. The Chronicles of Narnia is largely a Christian metaphor. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis Tolkien was very, very Catholic, extremely Catholic. And I don't know if Mr. Lewis was Catholic or Protestant, but I do know that the Lord of the Rings and, you know, Aslan is God/Jesus. There's, you know, the rebirth mythology is, you know, all part of the Chronicles of Narnia. But my point is that it is specifically and deliberately a Christian metaphor, Christianity metaphor, I should say. Mm-hmm. And but also. The reason why I take umbrage at mentioning Tolkien and C.S. Lewis in the same breath is because The Lord of the Rings, at least, was an adult story, and The Chronicles of Narnia are very much a young adult story, much more so even than The Hobbit. And The Hobbit was certainly a young adult story, too.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's part of the reason why Netflix wanted The Chronicles of Narnia, because now they can have a big franchise, Narnia, that's doing some epic storytelling, potentially, and it's targeting a younger audience. Get them in young, keep them.
Yeah, fair enough. So, okay. First of all, according to the Next Web, I'll quote, news comes from the Facebook page for the Chronicles of Narnia series. According to its announcement, Netflix will be developing both the series and movies from the books. Lewis's stepson, who has to himself be not young, Douglas Gresham, cites the advancements in distribution technology as a major reason Netflix was chosen, saying it's the best medium to, quote, make Narnian adventures come to life all over the world. Here's the deal to me. The Chronicles of Narnia are a fine story. I read them. I reread them as an adult, and was markedly unimpressed. Mm-hmm. Certainly wasn't as keen on them as when I was a young'un. I don't think the books are good enough to warrant a remake, and I don't think the movies are bad enough to warrant a remake. As a matter of fact, the movies I thought were a good adaptation. The movies that were started, what, 10, 12 years ago?
Something like that.
14 years ago, something like that. I don't think the book is good enough to warrant a remake, and I don't think the movies are bad enough to warrant a remake. Discuss.
Well, what I see here is an opportunity for Netflix to expand, because they've got the whole Narnia thing that they can play with now. And so they can build a richer world around the stories because they've got all this. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's part of the plan. So I'm expecting that in the series, TV series, we will see things that were not in the books, and things that may have been inspired by parts of the books. And then the movies themselves will probably be more like the books. So you can have the big pieces, the movies, and then all of this other building.
I mean, when I reread them as an adult, I bought the whole series in a book, and it is essentially the size of a book. Like, there's not a whole lot of material. I mean, these are kids' stories. Well, there's not a whole lot of material. I don't think that there's enough that you need call it a six series. I have a six episode series. I have no idea how many episodes they would be doing in any particular TV series for this, but there's just not enough material that you need a series to explore everything. There's just not.
Okay. Well, let me offer up Man in the High Castle, because it's not a big book, and it's and Amazon has really built that into something that goes far beyond what the book was, and yet is still true to the book. There's no reason why Netflix can't do that with
The Chronicles of Narnia. Well, that's an interesting thing. Philip K. Dick was, I have a very complex relationship with Philip K. Dick too. He was a terrible writer and a brilliant storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
Right? His stories make these fantastic movies and TV shows, but most of the time it's not because anyone is trying to stay true to the written story, in part because the written stories are not written well. We read the Android Stream of Electric Sheep, and it's much different from the movie. It's an interesting story. I love the themes that Philip K. Dick explores, but the guy was a terrible writer.
Yeah,
a terrible writer.
If you went to read Do Android Stream of Electric Sheep and have it be a compelling book, several years ago, I forgot which publisher it is, did a graphic novel version of the book. And so it's literally every single word from the book, but it's set in a graphic novel format, and
it includes the prose too. The prose between the quotes.
Yeah. It's the whole book.
It's the whole book. Huh.
It's the whole book. And it's great. As I read it, I was like, okay, I feel like I can really enjoy the book now in the way that I enjoyed Blade Runner. And that, yeah. So anyhow, that's the way to read Do Android's Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think if
Philip K. Dick were alive today, well, first, he'd be on a lot of different drugs. Oh, he would be
such a good graphic artist, a graphic novelist.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He would make the best graphic novelist.
Yeah. He can write a killer graphic novel. He just didn't know it.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right. So that is, I think, one of the differences. And the Chronicles of Narnia are definitely better written than most Philip K. Dick books.
I will agree completely. So now I have another question for you.
Yeah.
When we see, like, Amazon getting Lord of the Rings, and we see Netflix getting Chronicles of Narnia, is this the big guys, like, really doubling down because they see Apple coming into the space?
Ah, Netflix is doing its thing. Apple's not a threat to Netflix. And Apple doesn't need Netflix to fail for Apple's streaming video service to succeed.
Yes, that is true.
Right. This is not a zero sum game whatsoever. Well, I say that it's certainly not a zero sum game between Apple and Netflix. I mean, at some point we will have too many streaming services and some of them will merge and or fold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is,
that's just how it works.
That's just how it works.
All right. Well, do you think Apple is in a position where they can legitimately compete in this space?
Yeah, I think Apple is going to be able to legitimately compete in the space. We've talked about, was it on TDO or ACM, where we talked about whether or not Apple's, you know, goody two shoes approach is going to be a problem or not.
I think it was on TDO.
I think it was on TDO too. Yeah. And plenty of space for Apple to take, you know, this goody two shoes approach, and that's fine. Netflix is going to keep, you know, Netflix clearly knows what they're doing with original content. They're going to keep doing that with original content. That's fine. This is, this will probably be, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm basically saying that I'm not interested in the show. I will probably watch it or these movies / show. Oh, and Next Web pointed out something I'd forgotten, by the way. Hmm. Should definitely mention this. I'm going to quote, according to the same Facebook post, the deal marks the first time that rights to the entire seven books of the Narnia universe have been held by the same company, end of quote, although I'm still quoting the Next Web, which might explain why the previous attempt at a film series eventually fizzled out. And that is true. I'd forgotten about that. While I'm not a huge fan of C.S. Lewis, says the Next Web guy, or gal, Rachel Kaiser, while I'm not a huge fan of C.S. Lewis personally, the series contains enough evocative imagery and fantasy tropes that I'd be interested to see what clever or ambitious producers can do with Netflix's money. I completely agree with that assessment.
So do I.
Although one more thing that she said that I disagree with, she says, apparently Netflix also got The Witcher, which is a video game.
Okay.
Series. They got the rights to The Witcher. And she said, between this and The Witcher, it seems Netflix is going all in on dark fantasy. The Chronicles of Narnia are not dark fantasy in any way. What did shape, manner, form?
Right. And neither are so many of the other shows that Netflix has.
Yeah. The Witcher is a dark fantasy kind of thing, but Chronicles of Narnia is not. So I don't know what she was thinking there, but
maybe she hasn't actually read the Chronicles of Narnia, or was in a bad emotional place when she did. I don't know. Because Chronicles of Narnia is not dark fantasy.
It's not dark fantasy at all. It's the it is the opposite of dark fantasy. It is light fantasy. It is feel good fantasy.
Yeah,
it's
as much dark fantasy as The Wizard of Oz. Actually, I'd say Wizard of Oz is a little bit darker.
Wizard of Oz is way darker. Definitely has some dark elements to it.
Yeah. I'm going to kill the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. There, you know, there's some other, anyway. All right. All right. So we have another topic. Apple is, like, everyone's now talking about, Apple doing a October event, mm-hmm. although Apple hasn't announced it yet. Mac Rumors, Joe Rosignol, do you know how to pronounce his last name?
I'm assuming it's like the ski company, so it's Rosignol.
Rosling Mill. All right, let's go with that. Put together an excellent piece looking at what Apple has done. So there was an October event in 2010, 2011, 2012, 13, 14, 16, and 18. So skipping 15 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Apple sort of stopped putting out new products there for a while.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so why hold a media event to say, and this year we're announcing nothing?
Right. So question is, will they do an October event this year? The various things that have been expected are what? iPad Pro?
iPad Pro.
We're expecting that.
Mm-hmm. This will be the iPad Pro that drops the home button, has smaller bezels, has Face ID support.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
New MacBook.
Uh-huh.
They didn't mention MacBook Air, but I'm thinking of MacBook Air.
Yeah, or this could potentially be an Air replacement.
Yeah, it could certainly be an Air replacement. That is possible. And then they said iMac refresh and Mac Mini refresh. I laugh at Mac Mini refresh. Way too young. That device is only like 5 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even old enough for first grade yet.
Yeah, exactly. Why would Apple possibly replace that?
I don't even know if it can tie its own shoes.
iMac definitely needs a refresh. I would say categorically, iMac Pro needs a replacement. And then Joe also threw in some wild cards. He said AirPower. I'm going to say LOL on that. AirPods 2. That to me is a real possibility. Apple Pencil 2. That's also a real possibility. Why?
Okay, so Apple Pencil 2, I will say that's a possibility. But AirPods 2, I think that one of the significant changes with AirPods is ultimately going to be wireless charging, which they don't need to release new AirPods to make that happen. You just need a new case. So I think that... that because AirPower isn't happening, that Apple is changing their roadmap for AirPods, and you can sit there and have cramps like that.
Listen, no, here's the thing, man. Who cares about wireless charging? That's fine,
right? But I think this is one of the things that Apple was tying.
No, but there's stuff they can do with the W1 chip.
I'm aware of
that. There's improvements they can make in that.
I think that Apple had to partway along the way change their plans for second generation AirPods, and they are coming later as opposed to sooner.
I would call this later.
I don't think it's later enough yet.
All right, here's the deal. Apple in no way has to release new AirPods. I will not be surprised if they do. And I completely disagree with your reasoning for them not neither. There are so many things that Apple can do with the drivers and with the chips in the thing.
I accept your apology.
that warrant an AirPods 2, and that wireless charging is the least important of a case with wireless charging is the least important.
I agree. The wireless charging case is low on the list. Yeah. So definitely no AirPower. That is so not happening, at least in its current form. So what do you think Apple could do with a second generation Apple Pencil?
I don't know. Really? Better battery or...
And see, this is why I'm thinking, no.
Get rid of the charging? They can improve accuracy and response time. So, i.e. sample rates.
But that's controlled by the iPad. That's what made first generation or the current Apple Pencil so awesome. One of the many things.
Well, okay. So, but if they're going to refresh the iPad Pro, they could also refresh the Apple Pencil to take advantage of something that's in the iPad Pro. They could. I'm not saying they need to. I'm not saying they have to.
Good. Here's what Apple could do for a second generation Apple Pencil. You know, the feature that's in the Logitech Crayon? where you don't pair with your iPad, you just start using it and it works.
Yeah.
They could bring that technology to a new Apple Pencil.
And then, yes, and then they you'd should.
Have to have the little chip thing or radio, whatever it is, that's in the 9.7-inch iPad. You'd have to bring that to the iPad Pro. And that would be a compelling upgrade for Apple Pencil.
Yeah, and improved sample rates.
But the improved sample rates comes from the iPad, not the Pencil. That's all from the iPad.
You're 100% of that.
Absolutely, 100% certain. That's coming from the iPad.
I shan't argue with you. Here, you actually have an apology. I'm sorry, Jeff.
It's no, but see, you didn't know, and now you do.
Now I do, yes.
Okay, so what Apple could do if they wanted to increase something, they could add more levels of pressure sensitivity, because that's in the Pencil, not in the screen.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And that would be a very welcome, every improvement like that would be a welcome addition to artists.
All right, here's another thing they could do, as long as we're on a roll with stuff they could do. And I do not expect this to happen, but I think it would be kind of cool. The tip, you know, it comes off. You can unscrew it. Why not give us other tip shapes that we can screw on there?
Right. And that's going to need support in either the iPad or the device or both.
Probably both.
All right. So what I'm gathering, and I'm going to take your use of my use of Stephen Colbert's joke and throw it back in your face and go, I accept your apology. We now expect an Apple Pencil too.
I'll say we're even.
All right. So clearly we both agree on iPad Pro, MacBook, maybe iMac, LOL,
Mac Mini,
not even worth an LOL.
And
I just like,
Apple Pencil, like, I just don't.
Yeah, AirPods too, a possibility. No AirPower, though.
No AirPower. And the idea of a lower price HomePod, no, I am not seeing that happening. Not yet. I think it eventually will, but not yet.
Why not yet? This doesn't need to be... We need the microphone-centric device.
We do. We absolutely do.
The microphone-centric device for all the rooms that we don't need or want an AirPod in.
Yeah, and I think right now Apple sees that as the device on our wrist or the device in our pocket. And yeah, I don't agree with
it's
that.
It's wrong.
Of course it's wrong. But I think that's where Apple is right now.
You know, it's interesting. So, you know, what do I have here? I've got a one bedroom duplex with an office. I've got a HomePod in my office, and I've got two HomePods in my living room.
And I just shake my head at this. But yes, you do.
I will eventually be getting a soundbar for my TV and putting one of those HomePods in my bedroom. As it is right now, if I walk into my bedroom and I issue a command, I've got my Apple Watch on my wrist. I probably have my iPhone with me. Siri may or may not hear me. Same thing is true when I'm in my kitchen and I've got sort of, you haven't been in my place.
No, I haven't been to your place.
The office looks onto the living room and doesn't have it has an archway, not a doorway, a very wide archway.
Which is pretty awesome.
It's fine. To be honest, I love this place, but it's you know, sort of like an extension of the living room, kind of. But it goes, you know, it's at a 90-degree angle, and then the kitchen also doesn't have a closed doorway. It's just got an open doorway. So like these rooms are all open, and sometimes when I'm in my bedroom and I'm trying to issue a command to my phone, a Siri command to my phone, sometimes the living room will pick up. If I'm in the living room, sometimes my office will HomePod will pick up. And if I'm in my kitchen, sometimes nothing will pick up, despite the fact that I've got a watch on my wrist. So we need a dot light competitor.
just so you know, Apple's dot light competitor, when it comes out, it's not going to fix that problem. Because it's actually a bigger problem where Apple needs to refine their whole system for how the devices decide which is going to respond.
Well, I would actually say that in general, that system is pretty good. The real issue that I'm encountering is not a problem with the software like you're about to head down. It's more of an issue of the acoustics in the house and the fact that if you're not raising your wrist on your Apple Watch, it's not listening for you. And so if you're not expecting your Apple Watch to pick up, if you expect one of your HomePods to pick up, you're not raising your wrist, meaning you need freaking microphones to put in the rest of the house.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think Apple isn't at the place yet where they agree with us.
That's possible. If so, they're insane.
That's
if they can't look
well
and see what that Amazon is killing them when it comes to home automation, they're insane. Yeah, Apple has 70% of the $200 and above smart speaker market, but when it comes to home automation, Amazon's killing Apple.
Yeah, and they are. And they have all these new products that they just announced that will continue to do just that.
Yeah. And part of that killing is absolutely and positively having a cheaper way of sticking microphones all through your house. Right. Apple has got to give us that. Apple has got to give us a cheaper way to put microphones all throughout our house so that we can talk to our house and not talk to our wrist.
I agree. And I look forward to the day that happens, but it's not going to be coming this fall.
Why do you say that?
Okay, so if Apple's doing an October announcement for a lower cost HomePod device, this is a device that will be available for purchase during the holiday season, which means that it already needs to be in production, which means we would have leaks. And we have nothing.
That's not necessarily the case. The HomePod itself was a surprise when it was announced.
No, it wasn't. We knew they were getting ready to announce a speaker thing. We just didn't know exactly what it was. There had been leaks already.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Yeah, because I was thinking
how far in advance?
By the time the keynote happened, we knew every single thing they were doing.
That was the AirPower AirPods event.
Yeah, but
AirPods 2.
By the time we were within a month of the event, there were already leaks happening. Mm.
Yeah, all right. You were correct. I'm now remembering that correctly. You have your apology.
Man, we're just like the apology team today.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, if Apple was working on it, they'd already be making it, which means that we'd have our leaks.
No,
we don't have our leaks, so that means
the other side of that could be is that they do announce it. And they pull the same thing that they've been pulling on us for a while now, which is announce a product that's not even close to being ready and telling us we'll get it in the spring.
Yeah.
And that would just suck rocks.
Yeah. You know, fool me twice. Shame on you. Fool me a third time. Shame on me. The twice being AirPods and AirPods, AirPower, AirPods 2 and AirPower. Well, the AirPods wireless charging case and AirPower. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, of course, I wonder if that's going to be one of Apple's solutions for dealing with all its leaks.
Just
coming out of the supply chain is just start pre-announcing everything.
That seems like a pretty crappy solution.
It really... really is. Now, the ultimate solution, of course, is firing all the workers and running all manufacturing out of the States with robots. That's the ultimate solution. And having every you know, so that every employee working in Apple manufacturing is an Apple employee that Apple can rule with an iron fist. Like it does its Austin.
Yeah.
Manufacturing facility.
Yeah, I don't see that happening soon.
No, that's not happening soon. We can't do that yet. No, that's not happening soon.
But yeah, that would be one solution.
That would be one solution. All right. Well, I suspect we're out of time.
You suspect correctly. But it's been fun apologizing to each other today.
Always.
Always. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
God, you must be in a hurry, man. You're just like we're stomping all over the bumper.
Oh, well, I've noticed in the past few shows we've done the stumble thing through the bumper. So I thought, hey.
This time you'll stomp all over it?
I'll stomp all over it. We'll own it. And it's going to go smooth. We won't have any interruptions. And oh.
So you're just beating me. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Oh, Ricky. I miss Ricky.
I miss Ricky, too.
I miss Ricky. Recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Foreshadowed Mac Observer. They'll never see it coming.